Okay, so good morning, everybody. Welcome to what will be for now the last of the Metal Chabura sessions that we've had monthly. I appreciate everybody for coming, and we'll see if we continue again after Purim, Pesach, and Shavuot. So we'll see. We'll pick up again maybe another series later on in the year. So today I thought it'd be a very, very important subject. This is probably the issue that I get the most questions on, other than specific areas of end of life, is how do you deal with a patient who's in the hospital? We're not going to talk so much about the specific illnesses that they have. Let the doctors worry about how you deal with that. But how do you deal with the number of medical as well as hashkafic and halachic issues that come up all the time for patients in the hospital? And we're specifically going to be referring to patients that are in the hospital, as opposed to the same issues could come up to somebody in a nursing home, to come up with somebody even in their house. So we're not going to limit this only to a hospital, but I'll use the hospital as an example. The same halachic issues and sometimes the same hashkafic issues can apply as well in places outside of the hospital. So the first and most important thing I tell everybody, and I can't stress this enough, because you have sometimes horrific examples and sometimes unbelievable examples of making a Kiddush Hashem in the hospital, or Rachmana Litzlan, the opposite. If a person acts in an inappropriate way, so this can be very, very damaging for the patient from both a practical medical point of view, but much more importantly from a hashkafic point of view. When a person is sick, so obviously in Shemayim, they're judging that person. Now, we have no idea why a person gets sick. I'm not going to in any way suggest that a person who gets sick is responsible for why they're sick. They did this sin or that sin. But we certainly all understand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't ever allow anything to just happen. So there's a reason why the person's in the hospital. We don't know what that reason is. We can't explain why somebody gets sick, why somebody doesn't get sick. The biggest Rasha, he's 120 years old and healthy. And you have the biggest Tzaddik, he dies, Rachman al-San, at 20 years old. So we aren't going to discuss that. It's well beyond Moshe Rabbeinu's level. He said, Moshe Rabbeinu asked, how come good things happen to bad things happen to good people? And Moshe Rabbeinu essentially was told, you can't understand. So if Moshe Rabbeinu can't understand, Shlomo HaMelech asked the same question. He said he can't understand. So I certainly can't understand, and I assume most of you can't understand as well. So we're not going to get into why somebody's sick. But once they're sick, we know that there's an overriding principle. They have to bring zechusim, so to say, to get better. Does the person have merits? Doesn't have to be their own merits. It could be everybody's merit. We daven in the tzibur for a person to get better. How does that work? He's supposed to die. Because if the tzibur davens for somebody, that brings a merit. Everybody said to heal him. So, wow, that's a huge Kiddush Hashem. That's a huge zuchus to that person. He caused 100 people to come out at night and say to him. Oh, that goes on his ledger. And maybe that's what will push him over. And the fact that the tzibur needs somebody, if somebody is needed, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't just take them away. This is one of the reasons, a very interesting aside, why it says that Nadav and Avihu were punished. One of the reasons that Nadav and Avihu, Aaron's two great sons, who were great, great, great individuals, and they died. So one of the reasons, and multiple reasons that are given, one of the reasons it says that they died was because they weren't married. So how does that work? Why they weren't married? They couldn't find the shidduch. So how does that explain it? So the beautiful, beautiful explanation is that when you're a single person, so then either you have a reason that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want you to be here. Or HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, there's no reason for you to be here. But all of a sudden you have a wife. Wife has a husband. All of a sudden you have people, community that depend upon you. So then the calculation just can't be, well, he doesn't have any merit to get through this, so we'll just take him away. Oh, that affects his wife. That affects the husband. That affects the community. If a person is needed by others, so in the calculation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in his supercomputer deciding who is going to stay on this world longer, and who's not going to stay on this world longer. So one of the factors that's taken into account in that situation is, are there other people that need him? If 100 people come out and say tilling for somebody, if people are davening for somebody, they like that person, they want that person to live. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, how do I have a right to hurt those other people? The spouse of that person is now going to have a much harder life. The spouse doesn't deserve to have a harder life. This guy is, he's not such a good guy. But it's not fair to the spouse. So that's one of the understandings, one of the many ways that when we daven for somebody else, where we need somebody else, how other people can have an impact on the person who is nebuch sick. So underlying all of this is every time you make a Kiddush Hashem, if a person does something that's positive, he causes HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name to be glorified, sanctified, so that's a tremendous zuchus. If you are the cause of making a Kiddush Hashem, right? Every now and then they bring down a story in the newspaper where somebody left something in a cab and there was $100,000 in a suitcase left in a cab and somebody goes and returns it and he didn't take away any of the money. So, oh, that's a real wonderful thing, and the guy's written up. So if he's a guy with a yarmulke and a beard, so if he's a clearly, obviously Jewish person, that makes a huge Kiddush Hashem. Right? There was a story recently that somebody found some furniture, a couple of years already ago, found some furniture, he bought some furniture for somebody, and there was, in the back of the furniture, there was an envelope with some very expensive deed to something, and he returned it. It's worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. He didn't take a penny. He said, no, this is what an Orthodox Jew does. He returns an Aveda. And what a Kiddush Hashem. That's worth much more than $100,000. It was written up in all the newspapers. It's phenomenal Kiddush Hashem. That's how it works when you go into the hospital and you make a Kiddush Hashem. When the nurses, the doctors, when the administration gets news about a patient in the hospital that there's sometimes, you know, problems. So how does the family act? How do the family members conduct themselves? And I've seen the most beautiful Kiddush Hashem, and I've seen, unfortunately, the opposite. I'll give you examples of each. I'll give you examples where sometimes the hospitals don't do things perfectly, and sometimes things aren't as good as they are. So how does the family approach the issue? The family has a right to be upset. The family has a right to be somewhat indignant, and the family has a right to say, please correct the situation. The x-ray was ordered, and the x-ray didn't come. Right? The patient's supposed to go to CAT scan, and the patient didn't get there. There's a mix-up. Patient supposed to go for endoscopy, and there's a mix-up. These things happen every day in every hospital. Every hospital I've ever worked at, and every hospital that I know about. Nobody is perfect, other than present company. So, nobody is perfect. So therefore, how do you act? So there's basically two ways that people act in those situations. One is righteous indignation. How dare you do this? Now, what do you want in that situation? What's the goal? The goal is to get the patient whatever test they need to get the study that they need to get the treatment that they need to get. So there's two ways to go about it. You go talk to the appropriate people and say, listen, I know things are very hard. I know you're working very hard. I see all the wonderful things that you're doing over here. This test was supposed to be ordered. Can you please tell me why it wasn't? And if it was a mistake, can we please correct it? I guarantee you that the staff member that you speak to, whether, and I'll talk to in a moment who you should be speaking to in these situations, I guarantee you the staff member, if you approach it in a very pleasant, nice way, will be much more interested in fixing the problem. And if you're wearing a yarmulke, you clearly look like you're a frum person. They know you're a frum person. They'll walk away from there and say, wow, what a nice family. And most of them will say, what a nice Jewish family. And that's the way I want my children to grow up and act, to be like that. Wow, that Judaism, there's something special about that. There's something really special about these people. And I can tell you, I've had many times staff come to me and tell me, Mom, that's such a nice family, one of your people, always. I tell you, I don't say this with any exaggeration. So, one of your people, right? If I was a different ethnic group, I don't think they'd be so quick to say one of your people. They always say that. And they're not bad people that say it. It's just Jewish people, especially from people, are very closely knit and very closely identified with each other. And they say, one of your people, they're so nice. Their family is so nice. We made a mistake. We did this. And they understood. They were helpful. They were just wonderful and nice. You know what that does in Shemayim? Forget what it does practically, that they get the test a lot faster. You know what does in Shemayim? God says, wow, this person made a Kiddush Hashem. This person was the direct cause. Even though the patient was unconscious, the patient had nothing to do with it. This person made a Kiddush Hashem occur. God says, that's a huge zuchus in that person's benefit. Yeah, I'm going to let him live. I'm going to let the test result be benign. I'm going to let the test result show something that's easily treatable with medicine, doesn't need surgery, doesn't need other treatments. Now, does that work every time? Is that the guarantee? No. But that's a philosophy. That's a hashkafa. That's the way we're supposed to approach things. And I'll tell you, it works the other way too. I will tell you one patient, and I certainly not mention any names. This happened not that long ago. The air conditioning in their room didn't work. Happened, there was a problem. The unit on that floor, the air conditioning unit, had a problem, and they were repairing it. They recognized the problem immediately, and they repaired it. Thing, you just can't repair something instantaneously. They brought a fan into the room. They moved as many patients as they could off the floor, and they did the best that they could. It's an air conditioner. 50 years ago, not every room had an air conditioner. When I grew up, I didn't have an air conditioner in my room. You survived. I agree. I also like an air conditioner. It's comfortable. This family made, unfortunately, a huge chilul Hashem. They complained. They have a right to complain. That's not the chilul Hashem. You have a right to say this is uncomfortable. It was explained to them what was going on. They didn't accept that. They said, this is not fair, not appropriate, etc., etc. And, okay, you get a little bit upset. I think people can understand that. They had a legitimate reason to be upset. But you don't have a legitimate reason to keep on going and going. And unfortunately, every interaction with every staff member was, this is horrible, this is horrible, this place is terrible. Came to my attention. I go speak to them. The middle of rounds, we were rounding with all the doctors, everybody around it. I came up there to speak to the family and try to mollify them. In the middle of rounds, again, just constant disparity. The patient's getting better. Baruch Hashem, the care was phenomenal. Patients ultimately recovered from a difficult situation. Made a huge scene in the middle of rounds when I was coming there to try to help them. I had nothing to do with the patient. Then I had the chief engineer of the hospital come to talk to them, to try to explain to them what was going on. He is an Erlich non-Jewish person. Afterwards, he came back to me and said, wow, I was really surprised. He went out of his way. They already had been told 17 times what the problem was. He went out of his way. I said, do me a favor. Go speak to them. Show them that we obviously were very concerned about it. Wasn't something that was just being ignored. The chief engineer of the hospital, a very senior, very, very important person who had a lot of things to do and never goes to visit patients. He's not a clinical person. He went into the room to try to explain to them, don't be upset. This is what we're doing. They gave him an earful as well. Now, he's doing them a tova by going to them. He's explaining to them what's going on. He comes to me afterwards and says, boy, oh boy, those are, pretty ungrateful people. Your people, they were very ungrateful. Your people, that's an expression that's used all the time. And he said, you know what really bothered me? They said, and by the way, we didn't like the view. That's what they told him. By the way, we didn't like the view. They had a view of a building instead of a view, of a lake. I don't know. This is what they told him. We didn't like the view. Again, seichel. I'm not telling people something that they don't realize on their own. And I don't blame the family. I know the family was stressed. The family wasn't doing this out of rishus. The family wasn't doing this because how dare you do something like that. They felt bad for their nebuch sick relative who was in a hot room. You should know the patient didn't care at all. I spoke with the patient. That's not such a big deal. But this is an example, such a classical example. I wish I could say that it's a yotzei min haklal, an unusual situation. I would say this happens every week. And I would say it happens, Baruch Hashem, much, much, much more frequently, positively, where I'm complimented about families, how much they care. And that's the next thing that I want to talk about. But again, when you're in the hospital, everybody knows you're Jewish. Everybody knows, especially the firm people that are clearly Jewish, but your name is Silverstein, Goldstein, Goldberg, they know you're Jewish. So whether you act Jewish or not, it's you people. And the single most important thing I can tell people to do is to make a Kiddush Hashem in the hospital. How do you make a Kiddush Hashem? You thank people. The transporter who just schlepped your parent or a loved one from one room to the other. Does anybody bother to say thank you to them? Yeah, it's their job. Yeah, they're getting paid. They're not getting paid a lot. They're getting paid. But you know what a simple thank you does? Some of these transporters are angels. They talk to the patients. They keep the patients company. They get almost no acknowledgement. To say thank you to them. The nurses and even the doctors. To say thank you so much. I know you care for my loved one. We appreciate it. It goes so far. I know the little trinkets and gifts that patients have given me over the years mean more to me than almost anything else. If somebody gives you a small token of appreciation, I'm not talking about they gave you a trip to China, which you maybe don't want to take right now. I'm talking about, I remember the first gift I ever got from a patient, I still have it in my office. A patient gave me a little a teddy bear with its arms around another little teddy bear and said, thank you. And that meant so much to me, the first gift that I ever got from a patient. That type of a thing is going to definitely spur me. I'd like to think you take care of all patients the same. You give every patient the best possible care you possibly can. But I guarantee you that those little gifts, those little thank yous, make a doctor, a nurse, care a little bit more. And it's always reciprocal. It's always reciprocal. If the family shows thanks and gratitude to the caregivers, whether this is in your house with a house person taking care of a loved one, and you go a little bit extra and say thank you to them, give them a little gift around the Gaisha Chagas, giving them a little extra money, giving them a little extra pat on the back, it goes far, far more than almost anything else that you can provide. And in the hospital, when you do this, not doctor, you have to do anything with money. It doesn't cost you to be nice, anything. And I always tell people, you bring in a box of donuts for the nurses, they love it. They love it. And you put a little note on it, say thank you from the Goldberg family. So then every time somebody takes a donut or a candy, I tell people, give stuff that's easily divisible. You give a cake and they have to start cutting it up, it's a lot messier. You give individual small wrapped pieces, you give them little Hershey kisses and say, kisses from our family. It's an unbelievable Kiddush Hashem that you're making, and that is a schooler that your loved one will get better because you just made a Kiddush Hashem. Every nurse that sees that will say, this is how a Jewish family says thank you. And it makes a tremendous difference. I can't stress this enough. And unfortunately, the other way, nobody wants to go into the room of a patient that the family's always complaining. Every time you walk in there, you get a bracha. So, you know what? Nurses say, I have something else to do. I'll go there later on. I have something else to do. The next shift will take care of it. And unfortunately, people are people. Now, nobody should get treated differently because you're nice to them or not. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying people are people. And especially people that don't have to go out of their way. The transporter doesn't have any medical care for your relative. If you treat them like they're a transporter and nothing else, so then they'll be a transporter and nothing else. But if you show them a little gratitude, they'll wait there in CAT scan with instead of being on their phone, instead of doing something, they'll talk to your mother. They'll talk to the patient and make that stay a little bit more pleasant for them. That's, after all, the goal is to make things a little bit more pleasant. Other ways that you can make a tremendous Kiddush Hashem in the hospital is not poking your head in places where you shouldn't be. Right? There are areas at a hospital that are not for patients' families. There are areas at a hospital that there's privacy. You're not supposed to go there. And I see people sometimes just walking around, looking around. I'm looking for stuff. What are you looking for? And it gets nurses very upset when people walk into a clean utility, which is an area where they store stuff, and patients' families go and take stuff from there, whether it's nutrition that they're not supposed to be taking from there, there are other ways to get that, or whether it's various medical items. Well, let's have a couple of extra these. It can't hurt to have a couple of extra these when we get home. So, again, that's what's called geneva. You're not allowed to do that. And it makes, wow, what the fuck is a family doing there? They're taking those extra, 4x4s, taking a whole bunch of them, a stack of them. They're taking. Now, if you ask them, they'll give it to you most of the time. If you're going to be discharged and you say, listen, can we have a couple of chucks? Can we have a couple of these bandages? A couple of this? They'll often give them to you. But when people take things inappropriately, so then those people, they take stuff. Head of security at another hospital that I worked at. When I was the president and CEO there, I heard every complaint. Every complaint would eventually come to me. So he came to me one day. He was a very nice former cop, very nice non-Jewish person, really good at his job. He put his arms around me one day, and he said to me, Dr. Glatt, how come, and he was my friend, he wasn't doing this in an anti-Semitic way, he said, how come everybody in the hospital leaves when we say visiting hours are over, except your people? This is a Maaseh Shoya. I couldn't make this up. And those are the exact words that he used. And he was my friend. He was not an anti-Semite. He was an Ohavius Yisrael. He went out of his way to do nice things for me and for other Jewish people. But he said, how come? And he said it with a big smile. He says, how come your people are the only ones that don't listen when we say visiting hours are over? I have to always send the security guard back again and again. You know, visiting hours are over. Now, some hospitals don't have visiting hours that are over. I think that's a very smart idea. In my hospital now, we don't have visiting hours. You come anytime you want. The nurses sometimes have to ask you to leave because they have to do things to the patient that you can't have company there. We understand people have difficult schedules. They can't always come, so that's why we do it. But not every hospital can do that. And even in those units that don't have a problem with visiting hours, there are times that they have to say, no, we have to clear the unit right now. We're doing certain things, so please go. Why don't we listen to that? So that's very, very important. The visiting hours are there for a purpose. They're not there because, well, we just don't want anybody to be around so we can do all things wrong when nobody's watching. There's a purpose for visiting hours and non-visiting hours. So it's very critical that people listen to those. This is a Maisa Shahaya not too long ago in the ICU. Again, a family, Nebuch, the person did pass away. A very sad and tragic situation. Nobody's blaming. I want everybody to say, Chas Shalom, I'm not blaming anybody. I understand what they're going through. Both from a medical and also personal. We've all had our own sorrows and difficult times. So I understand very well what they're going through. But you know what? You know what? There's no excuse, no matter how difficult it is for you, to not act in an erlich way. This was in the ICU. ICU is a hopping place. There's always stuff going on. There are rules in the ICU. We don't want more than two people by the bedside. Because A, there's not enough room. And B, it's traffic. It's dangerous and it's not good. So there are rules. This family, without asking permission, because if they'd ask permission, there's always a way to do this. They wanted to do some Kabbalistic ritual by the bedside. Isn't they? Not against that at all. I said, well, I would help them do it. They needed a minion. But they just gathered a minion and came to the bedside. The nurses call me immediately. What's going on? I talk to the family. I say, nurses said, you can't just have, literally, there must be 15, 20 people by the bedside in a crowded ICU. Did you arrange this? Did you ask, can we have 5 minutes from 1 o'clock to 1:05 and we'll do this ritual? Which, because I'm not commenting on the appropriateness or not appropriateness of the ritual. Leave that for a different halachic discussion. They wanted to do this. Gesundheit. Ask permission. The nurses were extremely upset. Does anybody think that family got any benefit from the Kabbalistic ritual? At the expense of the huge chilul Hashem that it created, because they didn't listen. The nurse says, please, you can't be here right now. And they didn't move. So what do we have to do? Call security and move everybody? They call me. I'm the security. And I try to talk some sense into them. And they didn't listen to me either. Ultimately, they left. What a huge chilul Hashem that was. And what a huge detriment I think it was to that patient's health. As opposed to the benefit they were trying out of the love for that patient. I'm not suggesting in any way that the bad people, Rahmana Litzan, they loved their loved one. They were trying to do everything possible. Makubal told them to do that. So they're trying everything they can. But sometimes seichel is out the window. All you have to do is ask permission. The nurses will always do that. We had a similar case where a gadol, everybody knows this gadol in the community, was in the hospital, Nebuchadnezzar passed away. And they asked, can we please have a minion there at the end? They want to say vidui together. And of course you can. And the nurses watched and they said, wow, this is so beautiful. And the only difference between the two situations was one they asked and one they didn't ask. And it made an unbelievable difference. The nurse says, wow, that was so beautiful. That was a very nice ritual. And to see everybody davening together in unison, you know, they were appreciative of it. As opposed to the other one where they just came in, did the same type of situation, davening by the bedside, but getting the nurses all very upset. So I can't tell you the importance. I stress this a lot. I think a lot of it's common sense, but the Kiddush Hashem aspect and Rahman al-Islam, the opposite, are the most important thing that a person can do while they're in the hospital. How else can you make the life of your patient better? Say hello to the patient in the other bed. I always stress this as well. You don't know them. You have no idea why they're there. Jewish patients, Baruch Hashem, Mikam Chol Yisrael, there's 100 visitors to the Jewish patients, and sometimes the patient in the next bed has no visitors. they see a stream of people walking in, and not one person says hello to them, and everybody just goes, and they hear the laughter, they hear the, you know, the concern, they hear the love, and Nebuch, they don't have a family like that. You know, they get a call once a week from their estranged child in, you know, Hoboken, and that's it. You know what it means to them when you stop by the bed and say, how are you? Can I get you anything? You want me to get the nurse for you? Do you need help with something? I hope you're feeling better. You're there 10 times. You've seen them 10 times. And some people don't even know that there's another person in the other bed. And there are other people that sometimes bring them cookies. And there are other people that bring them, you know, flowers or something. I know you're not feeling well. I hope this will cheer you up. That A is a mitzvah, bikur cholim, which is a tremendous mitzvah. And your loved one gets the zchus for that because you're only there because of your loved one. So that's a zchus that your loved one has that now will hopefully make them get better. But again, the Kiddush Hashem, wow, look at a Jewish family. Look at the way they act. They don't know me from Adam. My own kids don't come in, and they're coming in and saying hello to me. Again, doesn't cost a penny. You're walking by the bed anyway. I try to make it a point. As a doctor going into the room, I always say hello to the other person in the other bed. I sometimes will tell them, because they start telling me what's wrong with them. I say, I'm not your doctor. I'm here just socially to say hello to you. And if you need any help, I'll try to get a doctor, nurse to help you out. It goes a long way. I wear my yarmulke. They see a Jewish doctor cares. It makes a huge difference. Every second that you make a Kiddush Hashem is the best thing that you can do for your patient, for every patient, and for the Jewish people. Nebuch, we don't need to tell anybody about all the anti-Semitism that we're seeing in the country. So everybody knows stories about this person and that person, General Powell, President Truman's, his Jewish friend. Everybody knows something. They're great stories where people, when they were nobody, and a Jewish person was nice to them, and then they become a somebody, they remember that a Jewish person was nice to them. So who knows, that person in the bed, who knows who they are, who they'll be, who they'll treat, and who they'll tell about how nice you were, or unfortunately the other way. So it's another wonderful thing that you can do. There are numerous other things in the hospital that you can help with if you have a problem. There are people in the hospital that are specifically interested in knowing what your problems are. There's a patient advocate. There's the nurse on the floor who's in charge of the floor. We either call them the charge nurse, sometimes an assistant nurse manager, a nurse manager. Every place has different names and different shifts. They may have different people in charge. The more senior people are there during the daytime, and less senior people are often there in the overnights and the weekends. But lav dafka, sometimes the more senior people take those shifts as well. If you have a problem, that's one of the best places that a person should go in a very polite way. To say, I'd like to speak to the charge nurse, the nurse in charge. I'd like to speak to somebody. And people are afraid, oh, I don't want to say anything. There's nothing wrong in saying things in a mechavadik way. The room's not clean. The room has a bad odor in it. The patient in the other bed is very loud. These things happen all the time. Every hospital doesn't have private room for every patient. Maybe 20 years from now, when they create new hospitals, they're always building them to all have private rooms. It makes life a lot easier. The way almost all hospitals are constructed right now is that there are double rooms. When I was a trainee, we had 16 patients in one room with a curtain in between them. A ward, right? The old wards. They were... There's some places that still have that, yeah. So in the United States, that's pretty much passé at this point in time. But that's the way it often was. And, you know, it can be very uncomfortable. So if you're in an uncomfortable situation, it happens all the time. Never. The person in the other bed is demented and they're screaming sometimes. You give them medicine, they still scream. You can't make everything perfect, no matter how good the care is. In the absolute number one hospital in the country, the same exact problems happen. You don't want your loved one in that room. They can't sleep. Last night, they got no sleep. So how do you address that? So there's mechanisms to address that. If you address it in a polite, nice way, you'll almost always get the bed switched to another room, unless, you know, it's Nebuch in a crunch, especially in these months right now, December, January, February, when there's a lot of flu patients and the hospitals are often at what we call a surge capacity. So then sometimes you just can't make another bed. You can't switch. But as soon as we have an open bed, we'll switch you. So most of the time, in every hospital, they'll work with you. certainly know in our hospital, it's one of the major things that they do is try to address these types of complaints and put patients in a room that will be more comfortable for them. If somebody is unfortunately screaming and yelling, you put them in a room with somebody else that's also screaming and yelling. They're both unfortunately demented. You try to make it that it's less disturbing to other people. Sometimes you put them in a private room. So you do whatever you can. The hospitals want to make the patients more comfortable. Every hospital, not just my hospital, every hospital wants the patients to be more comfortable. The way you deal with it, again, go to the head nurse, ask to speak to the patient advocate. If there's a problem, there are mechanisms in place that you can, sometimes I don't want to make a fuss, I'll write a letter after this stay. And when people do that, that's very frustrating because it's almost impossible to ever figure out after the fact what happens. You know, you get a picture from somebody and there's a mess on the floor. The place is filthy. Where'd you get that picture from? When was that picture taken? Was it just something just fell and they're rushing to pick it up? How are you supposed to figure out what went on? I always tell people, if there's a problem, address it politely and properly right then and there. And in this way, you'll get satisfaction as opposed to being upset and writing a letter afterwards, which is almost worthless because in retrospect, it's very hard to figure out what went on. And you get back a platitude saying, oh, we're so sorry, you are unhappy, we'll try to do better next time. What can we do about it? But if we know the problem right then and there, we can try to address it. Every hospital will try to address it in that way. And people say, I'm afraid they're going to take it out on my relative. Nobody will ever take it out on your relative if you do it nicely. If there's a nurse that missed the medication, so that nurse will need to be taught that the medication has to be given on time. You have to be very careful. The nurse won't get fired. The nurse will be taught. The hospitals have a culture, or if you call it a just culture. Mistakes are unfortunately going to happen. And as long as the person doing it wasn't negligent and wasn't nefarious and wasn't ruthless about it, they'll be taught to do it better the next time. And they'll become better. Everybody learns from their mistakes. If you do it politely and properly, A, nobody will get into trouble and your problem will get solved. When people go and do it in a way that, again, puts you in a bad light, always derogatory comments, so then it's unfortunately not the best way to go about doing it. Isolation in the hospital. Very, very important. It has a lot of halacha and nice ramifications. Right now with the coronavirus, right? So everybody's masks and things like that. So there's a lot of truth to this. It's nothing to do with coronavirus. That's the least of the worries. Flu. Hundreds of thousands of people get flu. Right now, there are 8 people in the entire country that have coronavirus. There's hundreds of thousands. There's millions of people. There's about 20 million cases of flu so far in the United States this year. And that's recognized. We don't know how many are not recognized. Right? There's over 8,000 deaths in the United States this season from flu alone. There's 0 deaths in the United States in coronavirus. So what do we need to know is family members, people visiting somebody in the hospital. So the most important thing is people want to do the mitzvah bikur cholim. Have to do the mitzvah bikur cholim. Tremendously important mitzvah. Right? Agreed, 100%. Don't do the mitzvah bikur cholim if you're not feeling well. You could be typhoid Mary. You walk into the hospital. You have a bad cold. You had the flu. You're spewing influenza virus all over the place. And you followed what I said, so you did it to the B bed. You said hello to them. You shake the hands. And you transmit it to the B bed while you go to your patient in the A bed. You get your patient sick, that's terrible. They get their doctor, their nurse is sick, that's even more terrible. Right? You talk to everybody in the nursing station. You get all the nurses sick, so they get all the patients sick. All because you wanted to do the mitzvah bikur cholim properly. So I would say it's probably an issur d'oraisa for a person to go into the hospital with the flu or any cold symptoms or anything like that. It's probably an issur d'oraisa. It's chovel. You're hurting other people. You potentially could be a rotzeach. People die from your flu. You won't know ever that they die from your flu because you will never hear about it. Nobody will ever connect the two necessarily. So it's critically important that people should know, don't go visit somebody in the hospital if you're not feeling well. Allah has kama v'kama if they're a cancer patient that's on chemotherapy. If they're in an isolation room themselves, what we call reverse isolation. Because they can't be exposed to anybody. The nurse is walking there with masks and gowns. So in case they happen to have, they're asymptomatic. In case they happen to have a virus, they won't get the patient sick. And you walk in there, you don't know how to wear a mask and a gown. You don't follow necessarily all those rules and regulations. They're really for the staff more so than for the families. And you get the patient sick in Rahman al-Islam. That could be a terrible thing. So this is critically important to know what isolation is. Now, on Shabbos, isolation doesn't go out the window. And I tell people, you must wash your hands before and after you enter a patient's room. Now, we certainly teach the staff that. I tell visitors all the time, wash your hands before you go in and out of a room. You don't know where you came from. You could be having germs on your hand that could be dangerous to the patient. So you wash your hands when you enter the room. And then they could have germs in the room that could be dangerous. So you wash your hands when you leave the room. And you wear whatever we call personal protective equipment, what we call PPE. That's all the stuff you're reading about in the newspapers, people buying masks and buying all sorts of gowns, and all the companies are out of them. So that's, for most purposes, in the street and at home, it's almost no value. But in the hospital, it has tremendously important value. And if they ask you to wear certain types of equipment when you go into the patient's room, you have to wear a gown, you have to wear a mask, you have to wear a shield, you have to wear gloves, whatever it is, to then follow the instructions. I'm only going to be there for a few minutes. Those are the instructions. Follow the instructions. I get very, very mad at doctors when they don't follow the instructions. They should know better. I don't get mad at patients, families, when they don't follow the instructions, but they should follow the instructions. If you're told you need to wear this and going into the room, do it. You have to wash your hands. You're allowed to wash your hands on Shabbos. You're allowed to wash your hands on Yom Kippur, on a Tainis. We normally don't wash our hands on Tisha B'Av or on Yom Kippur. So it's only a rechitza shultano, only a pleasurable rechitza. You can't take a shower, you can't take a bath on Yom Kippur or on Tisha B'Av because it's a pleasurable thing. But if you just walk into a patient's room who has a resistant organism and they tell you, you got to wash your hands when you leave the room, so on Yom Kippur you wash your hands. It's not a rechitza shultano. Yeah?
Do you have any comments about using the automatic taps? I don't know how you could.
So the automatic taps are again, if it's the only choice, so then you can use it. But nowadays, they have, most of the places, they don't even have sinks with water anymore. They have the dispensers. So some of them are automatic. So again, if there is no other choice, I think you're allowed to. I think it's a potential pikuach nefashos situation. And you can do it with a shino, you turn it on in some way. And most of them, they still have ones that you can just press. A lot of places, they're not automatic. So you hit the lever or something like that, and you wash your hands. So there's no problem doing it on Tisha B'Av or on your kippur. Again, if there's no alternative, you do it with some sort of machinery. I think it's pikuach nefashos. If you have a highly resistant organism on your hand, and you're now going home and transferring it to other people, so then I think that's a question of pikuach nefashos.
With soap?
So there's two different ways you can wash your hands. They have soap and water. So you're allowed to use soap and water on those days as well. So the hot water is not as important as you would think. It's the actual vigorous rubbing that does more than anything else. So we recommend using the lukewarm water. So it doesn't have to be hot water. So again, in a hospital, there may be heterum in that situation that the way the water is supplied, it may not be like in your house where you turn on the water, automatically it fills up. They have much bigger reservoirs, so it may not automatically be a psik ratio that it's going to flow in. So I think there's heterum for that as well. I tell people cold water is fine too. It's the vigorous rubbing for 30 seconds that does more than the hot water.
With the soap,
you can use soap and water. Yeah. Again, many places don't have sinks anymore. Most of the places, they just have the alcohol suspension, like the Purells or things like that. And again, you take the appropriate amount and you do it for 20, 30 seconds. People just touch it and they think they're a yotze. You know, it's like mayim achronim. I got the one tip of one finger wet, I was yotze. So it doesn't work like that. You really have to do the entire hand for 20, 30 seconds at least. Okay. So that's a din that people aren't aware. You think, it's Tisha B'Av. I'm going to visit somebody on Tisha B'Av. If you're in the hospital on Shabbos and you're a guest, so then you have to know Hilchos Shabbos. Yeah.
As you said, they also have the alcohol.
Yeah, that's what I said. They have the things that often they're pressed. You press a button, and that's not a problem at all with Shabbos. Yeah. The ones we were talking about with the automatic dispensers, but they're by motion detectors. So then if you can do it with some sort of machinery, that would be better. I can theoretically ask a non-Jewish person, can you press the button for me? The nurses in the hospital, the people in the hospital are very, very respectful. We teach them to be very respectful of all different cultures. I gave last week a talk to all the clergy, all the chaplains, telling them about the peculiarities of Orthodox Jewish people in the hospital. Well, you know, you're standing there, you're right by the light, and you ask the person, can you please turn the light on for me? And they say, what's the matter with you? You know, you think I'm your slave? I say, no, it's Shabbos. They're not allowed to turn on the light. Oh, then they understand. So if you explain to them, so the hospital, we teach them, I've given many cultural sensitivity talks at the hospital. It's a joint commission requirement that we be sensitive to all different cultures. We do the same thing for non-Jewish cultures. It's 100% equal equality. Every person should be entitled to respect for their personal, you know, mores and culture, as long as it doesn't conflict with the hospital. You know, somebody says, I have to light incense, I have to, you know, light a fire by the bedside, so we're not going to let him do that. I don't care. This is, has to do with Shabbos candles. People sometimes say, can I sneak in some Shabbos candles? I'll sneak in two tea lights. I say, are you nuts? Are you crazy? I never miss Shabbos candles. I said, this week you're not going to light with a flame. You'll light electric candles. There are plenty of shittas that say that's perfectly fine. You want to be machmi and you light electrical candles and a real flame candles in a hospital with this oxygen? Are you nuts? That's crazy. But people, because they can get away with it. Nobody will know. I'll sneak it in. So that's absolutely just something that, you know, people in their zeal, they're good people, they're not bad people. But in their zeal to do a mitzvah, they're doing a huge avla. If they get caught, you know what a chilul Hashem that is? And if they burn down the hospital and kill people, you know what a chilul Hashem that is? That's just horrific. And there have been fires in hospitals that have killed many, many people. Because the oxygen is really, really dangerous. So we will always be culturally sensitive. In our hospital, there's always electrical lachta. So you like electrical lachta. There are many poskim that say that's lechatchila, that's perfectly fine. Have your husband or spouse or whoever it is light at home for you. That's perfectly fine. To light in a hospital a flame is absolutely awesome from a halachic point of view, from every other point of view.
If I'm not incorrect, in our hospital outside of South Nassau, you could go and maybe we'll bring the electrical.
Yeah. The hospitals are so culturally sensitive. I know our hospital certainly is at Mount Sinai, South Nassau, like Dr. Kessler said. But every hospital, we're not the only great hospital. We are the greatest hospital, but we're not the only great hospital. Every hospital will try to be culturally sensitive to you. And the non-Jewish chaplains are aware. I teach them. I say, if the Jewish chaplain's not around, the family asks for a prayer book, here's how you get them a prayer book. They want to commit to tell them. So I tell them to get a psalm book. Oh, then they understand. They want to say psalm. So they understand that. So they have the combination to the kosher room that we have at the hospital. They bring up a prayer book. So they're a Catholic priest. They're in a Muslim imam. So they'll bring them the prayer books. They also know where to bring them the lachta, the electrical lachta. They'll also tell them where we have a Shabbos house. We have a Shabbos house on campus where people and families can stay. So all of these things you can get from the non-Jewish clergy as well. And it's critically important for people to be aware of these resources in the hospital. When you're a patient in the hospital, so almost most of the time you can be mechal Shabbos for yourself. If it's at all, you know, almost always they're considered a cholish yesh bo sakana, a person who's at great risk, and they can do even daraisas. So they're not feeling well, they can press the call bell, do an issa daraisa. If you're the family member there and you know it's not an emergency, so then you should walk out to the hall and say, can a nurse come in? Or if it's a real emergency, of course you can do an issa daraisa. Almost every patient in the hospital has a status of a cholish yesh bo sakana, which means a sick person that's in life-threatening, extremist type of situation. And except for the three cardinal sins, you can do anything for them on Shabbos directly, immediately, and certainly don't start asking yourself, is this really pikuach nefesh? Is this not? You do everything for them, 100%. If you're a doctor in the hospital, a whole different set of circumstances, because then you have to know, well, this is emergency, is this not? Is this pikuach nefesh? Is this not? A patient, family, they're not supposed to know this. They don't have to know this. If they happen to know it, listen, he needs to get a bedpan. He needs to get off the bedpan, so that may not be a nisa deraisa type of a thing. So you do it with a shinoi. Then you do it with some way to knock it down to the rabbanon. You can certainly do a rabbanon for a cholish embo sakana under all circumstances. So again, you have to know a lot of Hilchos Shabbos, but practically speaking, when you're in the hospital with somebody over Shabbos, Shabbos doesn't go away. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Then you need to know and ask shilas beforehand as best as you can. And a lot of these shilas, I've run out of time, a lot of these shilas come up in terms of using electric doors to enter into the hospital, their stairways with motion detectors to turn on the lights and things like this. So again, a person should try to figure out beforehand as best as possible. Many hospitals have a Shabbos elevator, right? We have a Shabbos elevator that's available for people to use. And there are doorways and entrances that don't involve the automatic sensors, or wait till a non-Jewish person, if you're not the doctor running in to do emergency surgery, the doctor can drive in. He can go and go through all the motion detectors in the world, not a problem. But if you're the family member just going to visit, so wait till a non-Jewish person walks through the door, and then you go through the door with them. So again, there are lots of very important halachas that come up on Shabbos that you need to know about. The patients themselves have less of a problem, because almost for everything for them, if they need something, they can even be over at the Raisa. Yeah.
I just want to make one more question, then I come to the end. just want to go back to the Kiddush Hashem thing. I know you mentioned before about writing a letter or complaining, but I think one of the biggest Kiddush Hashem for me to make is write a letter of thanks.
That's 100%.
I can tell you, I'm a doctor that works in operating rooms. When you send these letters in to the hospital, to the administration, you send it to the recovery room nurses, you send it to the ICU nurses, you send it to the operating staff, those letters get posted by administration, and literally hundreds and hundreds of people will read this letter because they've even posted for months.
100%.
They'll put up on the bulletin board, and people will come by day after day.
Excellent point. It goes back to what I said at the beginning. Thank yous are the most important thing that you can do in a hospital. And those letters, we actually get many, many more complimentary letters than we do complaint letters. When people tell me a compliment, I say, if you have a chance, don't just tell it to me. Send me an email about it. And then I can circulate it to all the appropriate people. And again, if your name is Hananya Rachachishenstein, so then they know that it's a Jewish person, and they say, wow, another Jewish person took the trouble to thank us. Most people are special. They go out of their way to give Hakaras HaTov. And we are. We're the nation of Hakaras HaTov. Right? Paro, the whole reason why Paro got all the klep that he's going to get in this week's Parsha is because he wasn't a Makir Tov. Here, Yosef did everything for them, and they forget about him. Here, the Jewish people did everything for them, and they forget about them. And in fact, who is this Hashem? And we are the people that are Makir Tov. And that's a great way to end the talk, and a great way to end this Chabura. And I thank you for coming to the Chabura. Yeah, last question.
Wait, one question.
No, please, one question. Yeah.
December, end of December, holiday season.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you, Merry Christmas. What do you answer?
So, again, when a non-Jewish person tells you about his holiday, so I don't think there's anything wrong with acknowledging and saying, I hope you have a nice day. Again, you have to know how to deal with it each time. Say, I hope you have a nice day, and I hope that your holiday is a pleasant one for you and your family. I think there's certainly nothing wrong with that. I tend to use the words your holiday.
They think you also celebrate.
Okay. Again, that's a whole separate question. Thank you all very much for coming.